Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
Exploring our oneness with spirit and each other. Unity Online Radio. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Today, I welcome back to the show author, teacher, certified awakening coach, Richard Anderson. He combines a full life as a hospital administrator, husband and father of three children, with a deep commitment to the spiritual path. So it's a joy to welcome Richard to today's show. Welcome. Glad you're with us.
Hey, Paul. How are you? It's lovely to be back on again.
Yeah, I'm glad you are. Richard comes to us from a lovely little corner of England, the border between Dorset and Devon, right on the coast there. It's a very lovely place, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely beautiful. And it was quite a pleasure and a privilege to show you and Wendy around. Was it last summer
came along? Yeah, last summer, yeah. I can hardly believe it's almost been a year now.
Yeah. Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah, it was a fabulous time there.
Yeah. I think what's really special is also showing somebody around who's certainly for Wendy, who hasn't been to this part of the world before. And you tend to start to open your own eyes and see what it looks like through their eyes. You get so used to what the world is around you. So it was a real privilege. Great fun.
Yeah, and that's an interesting statement, isn't it? Not just in terms of the place where you are, but whenever you share something with another person, you know, you get to experience it, you know, almost for the first time yourself. And I think that's sort of apropos to anything we might do. I know that's true of music, you know. If I've got a piece of music that I love and I say, hey, come on, listen to this, you know, I'm all excited about how they're going to receive the song, you know, what are they going to hear in it? And I get to hear it in a different way because I'm imagining what they're feeling. So it's like, oh, I'm hearing it for the first time. I've been playing So Long, Marianne by Leonard Cohen, but the John Cale version with Suzanne Vega, and
she's
a fabulous singer, and it's just I've been playing it over and over again, you know. And Wendy didn't know the song very much, so I was playing it to her, my wife, and it's just fascinating, you know, to penetrate into something like that. And I think you can do that with pretty much anything, can't you?
Well, that's kind of weird because over the last few weeks, I've been playing more John Cale than ever before in my life.
Interesting.
You're obviously zapping me some vibes across the Atlantic. So I've been blasting around in the kitchen, much to my kids' dismay, really. But I'm trying to educate them in the higher forms of music.
There we go. Well, John Cale's an interesting man. You know, he's originally from Wales, like I am. And, of course, for those who don't know, he joined the Velvet Underground back in the 60s. But he was classically trained viola player and has done some remarkable things. But he has a very powerful voice. It's kind of ironic that he was sitting in the background while Lou Reed, who doesn't have a very good voice because he's got a special sound,
Oh, I'll say that. I love Lou Reed.
Yeah, I do too. I do. But, you know, he doesn't have the voice that Tom Cale has in terms of its sweetness. But, yeah, of course, Lou Reed's a special man.
Yeah. This beautiful natural voice, a bit like Brian Eno. It's just sort of very transparent and pure. But I'm sure we're not really here to talk about rock music, much as we'd like to.
We kind of went off on a tangent.
I'm sure we can bring it in.
The way we did, but you know what we're talking about is ways of being fresh and new, right? The spiritual path invites us to see things new. You know, St. Paul said, "I die daily," and metaphysically, I interpret that meaning that he was born again every day. You know, that every day is a new opportunity. And, you know, I think part of the sadness that we sometimes feel and society feels is this sense of deadening sameness. You know, I'm doing the same thing over and over again. And the spiritual path offers a new way of approaching that, right? That every moment is all we have, actually. And, and therefore, every moment is an opportunity to awaken. And, you know, one of the things we were going to talk about on the show was you know, how to conduct a spiritual life in a secular culture, and a culture that, you know, is sort of dismisses the spiritual as sort of woo-woo or fantasy land. And, you know, let's get down to the real meat of the problems, you know, in the estates, you know, there's a lot of talk about Trump and what's happening here. And I know in England, Brexit is something that's on a lot of people's minds. You know, and that's the real world, right? That's what we really need to pay attention to. So how do we bring our spirituality to these issues? You know, how do we bring it in a society that doesn't really count it for much?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I first said about showing you and Wendy around this beautiful neck of the woods and seeing things through different eyes, what I was doing there, I guess, probably subconsciously, is just breaking the habit of what I see through my own eyes every day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think you just touched on it just now. I think research says that about 95% of everything we do every day, in terms of what we do, the way we move our bodies, and the things we do when we get up out of bed, we brush our teeth in the same way, we start off with the same tooth, we work our way around the mouth, we if we're mental, we shave in the same way, we pour our breakfast out and sit in the same seat in the same way every day. And to me, one of the greatest things you can do to get away from this, what seems like the real world, is to find ways to break the habit of the mundane. And one of the best ways I think that you can do that is to practice. There are different things you can do to practice to break the spell. Now, one of the first ways I did this years ago, I'm just thinking back over the first times that I started to invent these little practices. I was on holiday in the Isles of Scilly, which are 30 miles out into the Atlantic off the coast of Cornwall. And I was taking a walk on this beautiful island called Tresco, which hasn't got many people on it. I mean, a few hundred. There are no cars. And I was walking along the eastern side of the island. It's only about a mile wide and 2 miles long. One evening, as the sun was going down, and you know what you said about just dying to self? I imagined that I died and I just passed through to the other side and I was in heaven. And so as not to shock me too greatly, instead of it being very different, it was somewhere I was familiar with. And as I was walking along, I was just in a walking meditation, imagining that I was in heaven. And it suddenly became the most beautiful place I'd ever set foot on, as if I was in heaven. And then I realized, well, hang on a minute. In terms of breaking the spell, maybe I've spent, I was like 10 or so years ago, 35, 36 years walking on this earth in a spell. Maybe I was in heaven all the way along and I just didn't notice it. And so, you know, I wasn't consciously engaged in a practice, but it was one of the first times I realized that there are loads of different things you can do to break the spell and come back to what is actually reality? And part of that is finding a meaning. You know, so we're all sort of bumbling our way through life day by day, as I say, mostly subconsciously. But in terms of breaking that spell and bringing you back to who you are and who God is, you know, there are loads of different things that we can do. But what we have to do is start to become conscious co-creators, both with ourselves, with our true inner spirit, and with God, and then mending that relationship and bringing the two together. Because, I mean, as well as being unconsciously bumbling our way through life, I think those of us that are brought up in a religious tradition, which certainly I was one, I was brought up in the Anglican tradition, and a lot of my friends have been churchgoers all their life. But I see this this incredible kind of doubt, this huge wobble of faith, this sort of a distance between people and between God. And I've been trying to contemplate what's the root cause of that gap, and that manifests in real life as well. So, you know, how do we go through life if we're not going through life in with our eyes open and breaking that spell? And what I figured was at the heart of it was that we're trying to have a relationship both with ourselves and with God, but we don't really know who we are. And we don't really know who God is. We have a false sense of identity of who we are. We have a false sense of identity of who God is, or who or what God is. How can you hope to have a relationship between you and with God when you don't fully understand who God is and who you are? And I think it's within that, hopefully some things we can explore in our time together now, that once you start to resolve those, the connection between who you are deep within, what your purpose is on this earth, what your intentions are, that you will then begin to, once you resolve that and you open your eyes, you begin to manifest your brilliance, the brilliance that is you on this planet. And if there's anything that I can give the listeners in the short time we have together, it's just to begin to spark some creativity and to begin to break the spell and knock down the walls that separate you and your habitual day-to-day life with your actual meaning on this planet as you walk, as you make connections with people, as you go about your job.
Yes, and it, you know, the huge breakthrough that comes to many of us is this idea that, you know, the old structures of our understanding of divinity or religion break down when we realize that it's an inside job, right? That there's this exterior view of, you know, God is up there, I'm a creature separated, you know, from God, and somehow I can make connection, but I'm not sure how, you know, usually through the rituals of the church. And then this breakthrough comes that, wait a minute, you know, it's not out there. It's deep within me. It may be out there as well, but most compellingly, it's within me. It's an interior opening to something. I know that's true for me. You know, that when I had communion with nature as a child, you know, I realized later that I was communing with God through the beauty of nature. But it was an interior connection, interior feeling of that, you know. And as a teenager, sometimes you forget, you know, you become so motivated by your hormones and by what everything looks like exterior to yourself. You forget that connection. But, you know, I think it's huge when you make that interior awareness, yeah?
Yeah. I think when I was growing up, I used to love going hill walking, particularly in places like the Lake District. And one time I was sitting on top of Bow Fell, and I just thought, man, I feel just not feeling close to God even. I just feel God is here. He's in me. He's all around me. I kind of wonder why, you know, there's this sort of paradox that I didn't always feel that when I was in church, sort of shut off from life and from the earth. And a while ago, I was walking along the cliffs just down the road here, and I was looking at a cliff, and I just had this view that God created the cliff, then God created the sea to the side, God created everything. I opened my vision, my view, tried to expand beyond what I could see even, and realized there was nowhere I could run and hide that was out with what was God. And then I picked up a leaf and thought, this leaf is imbued with the very essence of God. It was created by God. And it was that moment that I suddenly realized, you know, I am the universe. I think that the atoms, the very stuff that we're made of, came from supernova explosions. So we can't hide from the universe. We can't hide from God, because God is what is.
Right, exactly.
For me, this is how you begin to reconcile, you know, the position that I guess you and I hold with the position that atheists and humanists hold. And actually, it begins to look not that distant. I remember a show you did a few years ago called Atheism, and it was mind-blowing. And the thing that really amazed me was just how close you were in sentiment to your guest, who is an atheist.
Right.
And, you know, just thinking about, you know, how do we live life as people who are hopefully spiritually open, spiritually aware, compared with those who maybe aren't? And I looked up the other day the British Humanist Association, and I thought, you know, all these people are doing is finding meaning in the day-to-day world, in their walk on Earth. Because, you know, their statement of, in inverted commas, faith is to support people who seek to live ethical and fulfilling lives. Well, actually, that's more or less what we're doing, except, I guess, opening to the context of what or who God is within that. And again, one of the things that really brought it home to me that it was an inside job, as you say, is using a thing called the negative approach. So actually what you do is you clear your head of all teaching, all dogma, all doctrine. The great way you can do this is to sit still, you know, settle the mind, concentrate on your breathing, and just take things away. Take away thought, take away memory, take away tradition, and just settle into the now, which is eternal. And then just meditate on the truth of just what is. And then when you begin to just sink into the nothingness of what is, it's then by taking all the stuff away that you realize that all you're left with is divine spirit. And that's what it is. And when you see God in that sense, you recognize that actually it's not about dogma. It's not about going to church at the weekend. It is, God is what is. And for me, when you realize that God is, you can attain the true knowledge of God through taking things away and just seeing and being in the state of what is, that for me, I feel, well, I don't believe in God. I know God. And for me, then doubt within knowledge is a bit of an oxymoron. If you know something, you don't doubt it. So for me, that was the path that led me into a much more comfortable but also deeper relationship with both who I truly am and who God really is. And is that I then apply to my everyday life? You know, meeting my kids, going to work, and there's some brilliant things that can begin to happen once you rest in that energy.
I think you put it beautifully there, and it, to me, it's all about the difference between first-hand and second-hand knowledge, right? Between the direct experience of something and then the conceptualizing of it, and so much of religion, however worthy it might be, it's a conceptualizing in form and tradition and dogma and ritual of the insights that we might have gained through first-hand experience. And unfortunately, you know, you go through your whole life just imbibing second-hand experience instead of being fully alive. And so if you're an atheist that's actually experiencing something directly, that's as close as you can get to God, as somebody that espouses, you know, a worldview that includes God, but is approaching it from a more traditionally spiritual way. So it really is. It comes down to the same thing. You know, are you experiencing life directly? This sense of I am the universe, as you say. You know. I think this is the key here, to fully alive to what is, right? As I like to say, to be present be present to what is. And it doesn't matter what it is, you know, because when you're present to it, you realize it is all the divine. It is all God.
And then you realize you can't escape it either.
That's right.
You know, the only way you can escape it is through thought going wrong. And by adding a load of stuff in that's not particularly useful.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I know you always say about, that unity is a practical expression. And I guess this does sound like a bit of an oxymoron, but for me, it's about practical metaphysics. Because you think, a lot of people think metaphysics is, I can't grasp it. It's some sort of form of strange philosophy. But actually, it's something you can really apply to the everyday.
Yes.
When you become consciously, consciously co-creating with the reality of who you are and who God is.
Folks, I'm with Richard Anderson. We're talking about wonderful practical spirituality. When we come back after these messages from Unity, we'll talk about other ways we can bring these truths to bear in terms of the politics of our society, in terms of how we raise our children, and how we find happiness in the simple everyday events of our lives. So join us in a couple of minutes after these messages.
If Unity Online Radio has helped you grow spiritually through programs like this one, please consider supporting this online radio programming. Visit www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now. Thank you for helping us continue to serve as the voice of an awakening world.
If you've ever wondered how a specific Bible verse might be interpreted metaphysically, then Interpret This is for you. In Interpret This, Unity Minister Reverend Ed Townley answers your questions about the Bible and how to apply its verses to your life with passion, depth, and spiritual insight. To submit a question or to enjoy any of his numerous metaphysical interpretations, visit unity.org and click on the Interpret This box.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. And by the way, in the latest Unity booklet, Dealing with the Hard Times, I think it's called, something like that. I've got an article and poem in there, so if you want to check that out, you can get one of those booklets free. Just call or write to Unity and ask them to send you one, and there's all kinds of inspirational things in there, including my piece. So that's always available. Unity is always producing numerous pieces of literature that can go out and help you live a more successful life. I'm with Richard Anderson today. We're talking about practical spirituality and touching that now moment of direct experience. You know, a couple of things that came to mind in the first segment was Thomas Traherne, the metaphysical poet from the 17th century, wrote a mystical text called Centuries of Meditations, and it was lost, I think, until about 100 years ago. But in it is one of the great descriptions of this moment of awakening, this Tresco experience that you were talking about, Richard. You know, he talks about the corn was the gold, the golden and immortal wheat, and the fields were golden and immortal wheat. The children were angels dancing, and everything was imbued with spirit. It's one of those moments of awakening to the joy and wonder of life, you know, and wonderful passage. But it also reminded me of the beginning of A Different Drum by M. Scott Peck, if anybody's read that, where a monastery was not doing well, and people weren't coming anymore. They had no inspiration. So they went out into the forest and came across a hermit who told them that, he said, "I don't know why your monastery isn't successful, but I do know that one of you is the Christ. The Christ is among you." And so he went back and told the other monks this, and they thought, how is this possible? But then they began to think, well, maybe it's the my fellow monk. It certainly can't be me. And so they began to act as if somebody amongst them was the Christ. And living from that compassionate point of view, everything transformed, because they began to lift up the Christ in each other. And so the energy became so strong that they were attracting all kinds of people to be at the monastery, and it became successful again. And I've always loved that story, you know, because it's exactly what you're saying, right? It's a choosing to see, in this case, the Christ, choosing to see the divine in things. It's a conscious choice. Do something different each day, because you're new each day. You can see something miraculous, you know, in the very ordinary things that we do. So it's a choice to do that, yes?
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I would encourage people, you know, today, if you're in the States, which is getting dark over here, tomorrow morning, go and have a look at a flower. And when you look at the flower, don't think this is a rose. Don't think the word flower. Don't think any words. Just look at the flower. Just really, really look at the flower, and you'll begin to see it for what it really is, without the need for words, for abstract symbols. And when you look at that flower, to me, you're looking at God, because God created the flower. It is that simple. We're always looking at you know, these childish notions of God as an old man sitting on a cloud with a big beard, something out there. But you're absolutely right. God is both within us, within our spirit, and God is also, you know, what is around us in terms of the physical manifestation of nature. But also, like yesterday, my youngest daughter's three, okay, so she's a bundle of fun and mischief. And I was saying, oh, you're really naughty. I said, I'm not really naughty, and I give a little tickle and everything. And then she'd look at me again and go, again. So I say, you're really naughty. I'm not really naughty. We just did this over and over again, like 20 or 30 times, because kids love this repetition. And within the laughter and within the hugs, it's just love. Well, what's the love? For me, love is God. And you haven't got to look too far. It's all around. A friend of mine who used to be an absolute ardent atheist, he said to me a couple of years ago, do you know what, Richard? God was always there, but I never noticed him. And he said, through beginning practicing meditation, he said, it was just stopping that made me realize. Because without stopping, I was just busy going through my ordinary day, and I just didn't see. And what I'd say to people is just look around you, feel things. I mean, a great practice you can do is a couple of times a day, just literally stop. And it's very difficult for us who rush around so busy in our everyday lives. Just stop what you're doing for 1 minute, and you can be doing the washing up. Just switch the water off, stand there, just stop. And it can only be a minute. But when you do that, you just begin to let spirit and let feelings start to flood back in.
Yes, very good. And one thing I want to point out too at this moment is I think it's important that even if you don't feel anything, something is happening. Because I think we condition our minds to think, well, if I'm going to have a breakthrough moment, a mystical experience, you know, it has to shake me to the foundations. You know, it has to come with, you know, bells and whistles and lights and all that. And I think sometimes we could just be present and you're just taking it in. May not be feeling any particular great transcendent moment, but something is happening. Trust that. Because later on you'll recall that moment where you were present to whatever it was, a flower, the ocean, a child, whatever, and you realize, my goodness, that was actually a connected moment. You know, it'll resonate later for you. So I think some of us shy away from these experiences because, well, I don't get any of that. You know, I don't get the Thomas Traherne moment of where everything is transformed into light and everything. But I think we don't have to set ourselves up for failure. That it comes subtly sometimes, and trust that, allow that, because the more confirmation we get through the subtle moments like that, the stronger our ability to stay in that presence, and I think that's valuable too.
Yeah, I think people often look at great spiritual leaders and have the impression that they're, going about their life 24 hours in a higher state of consciousness. And I honestly don't think that normally, if ever, actually occurs. I think actually what we have in terms of these peak experiences is little fleeting glimpses. And then they go again, but they stay with us. They may only last a nanosecond or so. But I think the thing that you can do that lasts longer is just to be more consciously aware of who you are and the effect that you can have on the world around you. And another little practice, I actually collected these practices up and put them in a book called Practicing Spirit. There's 40 in there, and a lot of them you can do when you're just going about your daily work, or there's a nice little prayer one you can do when you shut your eyes and you're going to sleep. You just say thank you three times for things that may have happened during the day, because it connects you with the grace of God. Things that have happened to you, been given to you, that you haven't really paid for as such, things that come free your way. And when you do that, you realize that the brilliance and the magic of life is actually made up of these tiny little, what are seemingly mundane moments. You know, the smell of toast in the morning, or a shaft of light coming through the curtains when you wake up. You know, that's the marvelous stuff. And that's what really connects you with what life's all about. It isn't all earth-shattering, but actually when you stop and realize, those things actually are earth-shattering. Because, you know, there's a wonderful phrase that Unity has that tells us who we really are. And I'll just quote it here. I'm a spiritual being having a human experience, living in a spiritual universe governed by spiritual laws, expressing through humanness but not limited to humanness. What this really means, you know, we're an eternal spirit. We'll be, you know, eternally aware and awake as a spirit. But within that eternity, we're only having, you know, a very, very short period of time in human form here on Earth. And the brilliant thing about that is, I heard somebody once tongue-in-cheek said, well, the reason that we come to Earth in our humanity is spirits can't taste chocolate.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And so, you know, in the time we have, there are things we can do just to recognize, you know, what is it that our gifts, what gifts do we have that we can bring to bear on this planet and people around us? I did a bit of coaching at work. It's quite interesting how I'm being trained in awakening coaching, which is, you know, brings in principles of spirit. But practicing coaching in a secular and managerial environment within the work that I do in health and social care, because it's very, very secular, believe me. If you stray into the across that line openly, it can get you into real trouble. But I was working with a dentist who was, she was full of neurosis, to be honest. And she just looked and she gave off an aura of a very worried, concerned person. And one of her problems was the people she trained with as dentists were all living in beautiful mansions with Lamborghinis and so on, and with a private practice, helping people have beautiful Hollywood smiles. She was working with the down and outs, with the people at the bottom of society who had terrible teeth, who lived chaotic lifestyles. She was being paid pretty poorly for it as well. And she just didn't really realize where she fitted into anything, really. So I did this wonderful exercise with her where you ask 12 people to give you 12 words that describe your qualities. So you get 144 words. Now, if you think about it, I looked this up. There are 60,000 adjectives in the English language, and you get back 144. What's so amazing about doing this is you start to collect together where you got repeated words. And quite often you'll get 10 words which are the same or mean the same thing. Then you can sort of crunch those down, and you're left with about half a dozen words out of those potential 60,000 that really describe you and your genius, your great qualities. And when you put those together, there's probably no one on the planet that has exactly the same combination that you do. It's a bit like a fingerprint. And what I said to her, and it really switched a light on in her head, is I said, that combination of gifts, of qualities, is your genius. And that's what you're here for on this planet today. This is what you're giving. And you just saw this sort of worry just melt away from her. And the next time she came to see me, she was skipping along the corridor. She was a different person because she saw how she could manifest her brilliance on this planet and what she was doing. She saw what her life was all about. And so that's connecting. That's connecting somebody in a secular society, in a secular environment, as far as I could see, with spirit and with meaning. I just
right. And she like moved God. Beyond comparison, didn't she? Comparing herself to these other dentists or whatever, and began to make connections within, to that deeper level within herself. So instead of being neurotic about, what am I doing? You helped her find something that was valid in herself. And then it didn't really matter about the money, The money flows to that, it seems. But when we put these things, and I talk a lot about this in church, it's where your priorities lie. Jesus talked about seek first the kingdom, right? Seek first this presence, and then all the other things will be added unto you. Unfortunately, that's the last thing we do. We look to all the other things first, hoping that they're going to make us happy. And then when all that's taken care of, well, maybe I got time for spirit. But it really needs to be the other way around, doesn't it?
Yeah. We fill our lives with stuff. And many people don't realize that they are worshiping, the author of stuff. Again, another nice little practice you can do is before you, if you're browsing in the shops, before you just, without thinking, buy something just to buy more stuff, you just have a thing, well, what's going to happen to that stuff? Because, what seems to happen is we have it out in the living room or in the bedroom. You use it for a bit, then it migrates to the roof, then it migrates to the shed, then it goes to the charity shop. It doesn't take long before that stuff is processed through our life. And it doesn't create any meaning.
Well, the trick I do sometimes too, I teach that many times, when I buy something, it's close to me. After a few months, I can't find it. It's gone from being very, very important in my life to no importance. But what I try to do is appreciate what I do have, instead of always rushing off to get something else, especially if I've already got something, if you've got a watch and, I'd love to have a new watch. Well, go back and appreciate the watches you have, for instance.
Yeah,
and begin to notice it.
Yeah,
and look at it and see it in a way that you haven't seen it before. And then it takes away all this desire for another one because you think, wow, I've already got this pretty cool thing here. And that's just an example. You could use it with anything in our lives. But I think we do it with relationships too sometimes. You know, we throw away relationships because there seems to be a more exciting one coming. And we go from marriage to marriage or whatever. And even with friends, we do this. But if we can go back and truly appreciate the relationships we're in right now, we may not have the need to stray or to find this new thing that we think is going to be greater. I do want to tell a story on myself. Years ago, I've attended an ashram in West Wales for many, many years. And we were in the middle of a puja with the guru and everything. And I was transcended. I was feeling so, you know, spiritually connected, And at the end of the puja, the guru comes out with some of the monks and immediately starts talking about the cows, because it was a farm where the ashram was. And I thought, oh, my God, we've just been doing these transcendent chants to God, you know, to the divine. And he's talking about cows. What's going on here? He's totally lost it. He should be in some blissful state, not bothering with cows. Of course, now I realize that the cow and the God, the same thing. You know, there's no difference. That if you're fully integrated, you can go from lifting up the divine and talk about cows, you know, and find no disconnect, no dichotomy. It's because you're dealing with what is, and I can't believe how stupid I was. But you know, everybody has to learn somehow.
Yeah.
So, what about kids? You mentioned that wonderful incident with your youngest. You know, kids are a handful, aren't they? How do we maintain how do we teach spirituality to them? Or maybe we don't. Maybe it's better not to. You know, what should we take them to church and you know, imbue them with some kind of structure and ritual? What's your thinking on that?
Oh, I guess what I'm attempting to do is not to fill their heads with loads and loads of dogma and rules, because you know they have their place. But for me, I've spent a few years trying to unlearn all the stuff that I learnt erroneously in the first place.
Yeah.
So I guess a bit like my friend who I got into meditation, and he just, you know, he experienced God out with the world of dogma and doctrine. For me, it's a case of I just want to take them to a place where they're able to appreciate spirit. So, you know, each to their own, I guess. But we go to a Christian community just along the coast in Dorset that practices a lot of meditation. They share words, but it's around, there's just beautiful energy, just spirit. You know, there's, for me, I suppose the thing that differentiates us from the humanist that I mentioned earlier is the knowledge that there's something that is supernatural, that amazing, seemingly really weird things happen, and those things do not come from our power as people. They come from God, and God is supernatural. I guess, I don't know, I'm just trying to help them to see that there is another thing. I had a colleague and mentor who was an atheist, and he just couldn't hook into this thing that there was something supernatural. There was nothing outside of the physical, the world that we've just been describing, the world of stuff. And so far I can say it's working. Because, yeah. You know, when we go to this place, and when my oldest two are 11 and 13, so they are of an age where they can understand and experience the supernatural, and they both do. My three-year-old is just beautiful and full of love and mischief and everything. She obviously doesn't get these as concepts, but what she does get is love. You know,
I think the danger of, you know, calling something supernatural is that, you know, it can be an overlay. You know, you got the real world, and then you've got all this extra world, but where things are supernatural. And I'm not denying that there is supernatural dimensions, but you know, I think for a lot of people, when they hear that, it's like they stop thinking, they stop taking you seriously, because oh, now he's gone into, you know, this overlay of the supernatural, whatever, the unreal. And you know, I like the idea that there are no miracles. Actually, everything is a miracle, right? That this idea that we have in Unity, that they're not exceptions to the laws, they're a higher working of the laws. And so I would see supernatural in that context too. It's natural, it's just so beyond what we can conceptualize with our minds that we call it supernatural. But it's not an exception. It's not something different from, you know, reality. It is just reality working it in a more subtle and profound way. To avoid that, just, you know, separation that some people go to, you know, between the real world and then this nice little woo-woo world that you feel need to have, you know. Because I don't like to go there with people, you know, because I see their minds, you know, they turn off. They're not listening anymore, you know.
I think it can be a bit of a contrived and an awkward word. And to be fair, it's not a word I use terribly often. But again, just bringing back, you know, how do you practice spirit in a real world? I mean, I'm guessing most people listening to this show here are, you know, retired and they do meaningful things in their retirement, or they're, you know, they're engaged in the 9-to-5. So just to give you another example of where there's something which you may describe as supernatural if you wanted to use that word, but it's definitely something that wasn't of, you know, that you would normally experience in the day-to-day, in your day-to-day day in the office. I had a really, really awkward and potentially very confrontational meeting a couple of weeks ago. And this was someone who was really quite angry at us and somebody in my team. And so before we went in, I did a bit of coaching with the two people I was going in with, who the person we were meeting really wanted just to savage, really. And we talked about our energies. And, you know, the way when you look at what we really are, there isn't really much stuff in us in terms of physical. You could crush the earth down to become a black hole, and everything on and in the earth would become the size of a pea. You know, when you look at particles, particularly from a subatomic sort of quantum physics perspective, there's not really any stuff. It's energy. We're simply energy. So what we talked about going into the meeting was the energy that we brought to the meeting. And what we said is, if we go into our ego and we don't recognize that, we'll wink at each other. And that would be the sign, snap out of your ego and come back to who you really are and what energy you can bring to the meeting. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I obviously didn't use the word supernatural with my colleagues, but when I came out and of the meeting, I was going back home in the car, I just thought, what happened there? Because it wasn't normal. The energy that we brought in and our intention to have a positive, constructive discussion and not conflict, you know, that you might call a high vibration or whatever, but that was really incredibly manifest in a very strange way. That if we hadn't gone in with that intention, that knowledge of energy and what we as people could bring to it, that meeting wouldn't have happened in that way. And for me, this is a way in which you can bring your knowledge of spirit into the day-to-day secular world, particularly with people who wouldn't normally, you know, see things in the same way that we might necessarily, those people that listen to the program.
Yeah, that's a great example. And avoids frightening people off too. You know, it's using people's innate natural understanding of these things. Because I think I'm a big believer that we all feel this. You know, it's not exceptional to quote spiritual people or whatever. I'm a big advocate that all people have this awareness, that nobody needs to be dismissed. Even the people we despise, you know, are still beautiful children of God, aren't they?
Yeah,
one thing that Maggie Whitehouse said on the weekend, and that is, the more important parts of you are the easiest to, how did she put it? For instance, the earth, you could survive with food for a few weeks. Then you move up to water. You can survive without water for maybe a week or so. But, air, you can only survive for a few minutes. You've moved up from earth to water to air. Fire, if the sun went out, you'd be gone immediately. When you get to spirit, you need it completely. So you can survive at a basic survival level for a few weeks. But when you move up to this higher level, you're totally dependent on it being present at all times. And I think this is an interesting idea that it's got greater reality at the higher level you go. So this, we tend to think of the earth as very solid and real, but really it's the opposite. It's the spirit that we're completely dependent upon, and the earth is very fragile. Yeah, you can survive at that vegetable level for a while, but without any higher consciousness. And I've just thought of that as an interesting idea. I want to muse on that some more, because I think she could be right.
Mm. Yeah, and I think another exercise that going back to my colleague, the dentist, she was so stuck in her ego that we did a little exercise, which I guess is kind of like a condensed form of awakening. Again, didn't use the word awakening, we talked about mindfulness, which is just about acceptable in a secular society. And there's a wonderful little exercise you can do where, say, if you're listening to the sounds of my voice right now, you say, well, does it require any effort to hear the sounds of my voice? And does it require any thought to hear those sounds? Is there any time delay between the sound arising and the hearing of the sound? So then when you go through that, you can ask, would it be true to say the hearing is thoughtless, timeless, and effortless? And then you can just relax into that which is hearing the sound. And as you do that, you then move back into the person or the thing that's aware of the sound. And you can do the same with feeling physical sensations or seeing things. And then you ask, well, who's experiencing this moment? Who or what's experiencing it? And then typically people say, well, I'm experiencing it. Okay. So who or what is aware of the I? Who or what is aware of the me? As you go back and back and back, you realize that the thing that's aware hasn't got any size. It doesn't make any sounds. It's got no qualities. It's not a thing you can see as an object. It's just pure. It's the subjectivity. It's the subject that sees the object. So the subject sees the I, sees the me. It's not the ego. And then, I mean, it's quite amazing, actually. I think on the planet, what seems to be happening is a great movement. When you do these sorts of exercises with people, people are beginning to get it faster and faster. Now, this the dentist I was working with, she got an incredible kind of awakening experience through doing this, and it took her 5 or 10 minutes. And that's pretty amazing. And when she came to the realization who she really was and what her place on the planet was and what her genius was, well, my work was kind of done. I didn't do anything. I just asked a few questions.
Very good.
I think within that, you don't need any words of, supernatural or religion. Just what it is.
Exactly. And some of us call it the witness, this place. Yeah. And I was with a professor one time. And John Dunn, his name is, he says, why do you have to label it witness? And I thought, ooh, that's good, because we always have some kind of label for something, even at that exalted level. And I thought, even the witness is not necessary. It just is, beyond my conceptualizing of what that spiritual observer self is. Just then it becomes not a direct experience anymore. It becomes secondhand. So it's always pushing it back to the direct experience, right? Beyond words, beyond thoughts, beyond ideas of who we might be, and simply be present to what is. And even if you don't feel anything, it's okay, because who's feeling it anyway? That's just the construct around what you're supposed to feel at any given time. And it's going into the, as you mentioned earlier, the nothingness, the emptiness that really is God, right? That contains everything.
Yeah. And within that, you can also mend those relationships we're talking about, because when you realize that you are no thing, you're not a thing, and then you realize that the person who you're looking at, your spouse, your children, your colleague, they also are a no thing. Well, what separates no thing from no thing? What separates nothing from nothing? What's the answer? Nothing.
And so,
you know, what we're doing, I think, is whilst we can be conscious of getting rid of stuff, physical stuff, stopping buying stuff and filling our garages up with stuff, we can also think about that in terms of thought. So we strip away thought and concepts and the difficult stuff, and it becomes incredibly simple. I think Krishnamurti said, in terms of meditation, don't go into meditation with the thought of achieving something or doing things. Go into meditation with the thought of nothing, no thought. Just be current and open and available to
exactly.
What is.
Exactly what we're saying.
Yeah.
Folks, I can't believe this, but we're already out of time. It's rushed by. I could talk for another 4 or 5 hours easily on these topics and with this wonderful person, Richard Anderson. But we'll have to put that off till another time, okay? But we'll definitely have you back if you're willing to be on the show again.
Oh, absolutely. It's wonderful. Yeah.
Let me tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Richard. Next week, co-author, professor, teacher Stanley Krippner joins me to talk about his book on Rolling Thunder, if you remember him, the controversial and charismatic Native American shaman from the 60s and 70s, and who he really was and what the heck was going on with Rolling Thunder. He was influential in many ways, especially amongst hippies, the New Age, etc. So that should be interesting. So join me there. In the meantime, thank you so much, Richard, for your insight and your wisdom and your delightful presence. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you so much.
All right. And thanks for listening, folks. See you next week. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world, and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org. Just like life, grief is a journey, not a destination. Whether it is loss of life, relationship, security, or simply the process of change, have you given yourself permission to begin your journey of grief? Have you yielded to the gift of grace? Join Reverend Chaz Wesley every Thursday at 5 p.m. Central on a virtual navigation from grief to grace, and explore new horizons of empowerment, significance, and support. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'll light a candle in your name.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.